Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the monthly Classics World chat podcast, vodcast. We haven't really worked out what we're calling this yet.
Yes.
This month, we're going to be talking about a feature that we did run in Classic Car Buyer, but quite a long time ago.
2018, I think.
Yeah, long time. Things were in black and white back then. And it is something that we talk about a lot as car enthusiasts. The three-car dream garage. So between us, we've each picked a classic that we would daily drive, one that you take out for fun on the weekends, and then a wild card, which could be basically anything. So you don't even have to use it every day or even every week. Just something you like having to look at and occasionally use. And I think, chaps, start sensible, daily drivers.
So I have to say, I did try and look back at the old article to see, A, if I wrote in it, because I can't remember who wrote in it, and what if I did write in it, what I actually put.
But that's very eco-friendly, recycling.
Yeah, so exactly. So I couldn't find any of that reference. So if anyone does find a 2018 copy of Classic Car Buyer,
if anyone has a copy of our paper, they can send us.
And find my choices, because I can confirm whether I've been consistent or woefully inconsistent. But anyway, my daily driver choice was kind of skewed by a number of factors. One, I kind of live out in the sticks.
Yeah.
It's very muddy. There's very bumpy roads, tracks and all that kind of stuff. So I wanted something a little bit utilitarian. And there's also a slightly romantic notion with this one, because this, I went on the launch of this car when I first started motion journalism.
Yeah.
Back in the late 90s. So it's a Jeep Cherokee XJ generation.
Ooh.
With the
4 litre.
4 litre. Mm.
Straight six and
good engine,
yeah.
And a spare wheel that was pushed up against the side.
That's right.
Window.
It had
to be awkward in this country.
A boot space roughly the size of a Suzuki Swift, even though the thing's massive.
And it did 8 to the gallon.
Yeah, but so I went on the launch of them because they were only officially UK imported from '93. Mm. I mean, they were introduced in 1984, I believe, the XJ generation, but they came to the UK 9 years later. But when they came to the UK in 93, they still had the very American-esque fascia and spindly three-spoke steering wheel. And I love all of that.
It was the early days of Jeeps becoming family SUVs, as they were.
They helped launch that sector. Because when you were saying, like, 4x4, the fact you live in Oxfordshire, I was waiting for a Range Rover. I'll be honest, I thought you were going to say Range Rover. But you know what? I applaud you for not going Range Rover.
Well, that was exactly it. You could either go down the Land Rover route,
or you could get home.
But on the back of a...
other breakdown services are available.
Yeah.
Mr. Cochran, what about you, sir?
Well, I've picked a car that I've never driven, but I really do like the look of, and I guess it may also be owing to the fact that I am a city boy, as it were. I've picked a Honda Insight.
Gen 1.
Which you're not really fitting anybody in the back of, but in lieu of people, you can fit a decent amount of luggage.
You can.
If you're light on your foot, you'll probably get around 50 miles per gallon.
Oh, all of that.
That's lovely for me. And to be honest, there is joy in driving that isn't just going fast.
Agreed. Yeah.
Having a little bit of little bit of extension, see how much you can get out of the tank is always a little bit of fun. And great fuel mileage, great looking. If you can manage to put that on some coilovers.
Some nice little dishy wheels on
there. Get some T37.
Yeah.
Some real hot boy wheels.
Do you know what? I'm kind of here for that.
I think they genuinely do look really good.
Yeah.
Just as, even in stock format.
Yeah.
I think they're Honda at their very best.
I agree. That era of Honda.
That's like late 90s.
S2000 era. NSX.
Mm. Proper ingenuity.
Honda Insight. Oh, it's got an S2000 steering wheel.
Yeah.
We did have an Insight project car.
We did.
About a week.
Yeah.
I was gonna say,
slightly ill-fated.
And then to plug some photos.
You're not wrong about the economy, though, because when our man Jack Gromer had that, he drove it from Peterborough down to Cornwall, it was, and he was on motorways, but he wasn't specifically eco-driving. He was just driving normally. It did 91 to the gallon.
Wow.
It may as well be running on fresh air at that point.
Yeah, it's an XL1.
Yeah.
Actually, I probably should have been my answer to that here, though.
That's nice.
So,
very good.
I went for economy. I went for comfort. I don't need a 4x4, and I don't like SUVs, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
So my choice is something that gives me kind of a flavour of my dream car, but in a more realistic real-world package. Citroën BX diesel.
Okay.
Because you've got the XUD diesel engine, which is up
there. Are we going to the 1.9 or the 1.7 turbo?
Oh,
haven't thought that one through. Yeah. 1.9, it lasts forever.
I think so.
Yeah, because 1.9, you use zero throttle to pull away from a light.
Yeah, exactly. It'll do on its own. So it's never going to be fast. You won't get a speeding ticket in it. But it's fantastically floaty. I'd go for an earlier one, so you've got, you know, sort of a quirkier interior and a bit. And BX is a fantastic car.
Well, we did a BX road test. Was that a petrol or a diesel?
That was a petrol one, a slightly later car.
What about the Manor Park one? Was that a petrol or
diesel? That was a GTI.
Ooh.
But no, I'd go for the diesel because it will last forever. It will do a gajillion miles, like you say. Mm. You can run it on chip oil if you need to. You know, not that we're condoning not paying tax on that. You can fit
chip oil.
Yeah, exactly. But no, you can fit five people. Even as a hatch, it's capacious, and as an estate, you could live in it. Mm. I think they're fantastic. They're still very undervalued. Actually, I think they look good. Gendini styling, I think they look great.
I'm a bit scared about the suspension, right? But actually, the specialists are all over it.
To be honest, the BX,
maintaining it's actually not that difficult.
I think the BX is probably the best compromise, if not the Xantia, because you haven't got all the fancy hydractive active anti-roll bar stuff. You haven't got the self-leveling and the computers like the C6. Mm. It's about as simple as that suspension gets.
And they're getting to the point in age where all the bad ones are sort of rotting away junkyard, and the good ones are just going to...
So that would be BX diesel, and if I'm being really picky, I think it would have to be red, and I might even cheekily put some Turbo 5 GTI wheels on it. Right. But forget looking sporty, gentlemen. If you're going to have a fun weekend car, you're going to get up on a Sunday, you're going to go for a little blat. Mr. Whedon?
Yeah, so I went not figuratively round the houses with my choice here, because I think there was a temptation to go nippy and sporty.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of very nice B roads near where I live.
Yeah.
But I actually also quite like a long legged drive.
You like a waft, don't you?
Yeah, so I like something that can do the B road bash, or I could do an autobahn hustle through mainland Europe in equal measure.
I'm going to pause you very quickly. Which Jaguar has he chosen?
Well, did you choose to me?
Do you reveal
the video now? I guess.
I did have to have a Jaguar in my choices, right? So you're absolutely right. So it is an X150 Jaguar XKR.
Ooh.
And actually, I would deliberately bookend my choice. If I had an unlimited budget, I would go with a very late 2013-2014 5-litre V8 in that sort of Italian racing red colour.
Mm-hmm. So are we talking coupe or drop top?
I would go coupe, actually, because as much as I like a drop top, I'd want to be able to enjoy it, fun to drive all year round.
And I think coupes look
sensational. Absolutely fabulous. And there's also a part of me now, the last ones were produced over 10 years ago.
Mm.
All this Jaguar reinvention stuff that's got everyone a bit frothy. It just feels like that is the last of an era.
Yeah.
Whether you think that's a good era or a bad era.
I think that car was launched at a time when Jaguar could do no wrong.
It was engineered very well. Yeah. That aluminium body shell, that V8 engine. I just think it's, as a collectible keep, I know it's a little bit on the modern side, but I think as a kind of last hurrah of a Jaguar V8. Yeah. I could have gone newer and gone with the F-Type, because I still think the F-Type is gorgeous.
Absolutely. Sensational.
It is lovely.
There's something, I just prefer the slightly softer, more elegant
cruiser sort of
lines of the 150.
Which isn't to say that it's too laid back. I mean, you put your foot down. We figured that out the hard way when we did
nine
versus...
and the good thing is you can pretty much pick and choose your model depending on your budget, because you can pick up 150s for...
$5,000.
$5,000, $6,000, $7,000. Yeah. XKR's maybe seven and upwards. Mm.
But the one
I looked at online when I was doing the research for this was up for £30,000, like a last 2014 one. It wasn't an XKRS. I wouldn't go for the slightly crazy spec one, because they are fabulous. They were great. But I would just go with an XKR.
There we are. Go on,
predictable, but good.
Weekend fun choice.
Well, you say you were talking about budgets, and I may have messed up a little bit on that front.
See, you bought Bugatti Veyron.
No, it has to be classic, because I have a couple options, neither of which will get you past the corner shop. I was thinking either Alfa Montreal or Maserati Ghibli, 69, not 2014, because again, nobody wants anything to do with that car. Just for the sake of them being absolutely gorgeous. As classic car enthusiasts, we know that pretty much any classic we own is going to be a weekend car. It's going to be something
fun to drive and fun to look at.
What, no one saw that
fun
coming.
To look at. Well, no one saw it going either.
go on then. If you were at gunpoint, you had to choose one.
They'd probably have to be Montreal. I mean, they both have similar It's all in the lights for me, really.
Yeah, those lights are amazing.
And, you know,
yeah.
But the Montreal's got the slats, whereas the Ghibli is just flat. They both do the same thing, but the Montreal just looks a little bit cool.
They're cool.
And the specs on this look a bit nicer too. That green that you can find with one of the best green over tan combinations you can find.
And a V8 Alfa Romeo. You say all the words. Mm. V8 Alfa Romeo with pop down headlights.
Mm.
Every petrolhead is just frothing at the thought of that. And it's fantastic.
Yeah. Frothing at the wallet too.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, fair play. I have to commend you on that.
Choice.
So my choice, we wouldn't see which way either of yours went. But it wouldn't cost anything like as much, but I think I'd have the biggest smile. So my choice for a fun weekend classic, MG Midget.
Yeah.
Because, frankly, there are few cars as much fun as a midget for any amount of money.
I know you like a small roaster.
I do. I like the Honda Beat and so on.
The Beat. Do you fit in a midget?
I do fit in midgets, yeah. Surprising. They don't look it, but they're surprisingly roomy. For me, it would be a 1275 square arch. I know people prefer the round arch midgets. I know there's, you know, let us know in the comments which you prefer. For me, it's got to be the chrome bumper. It's got to be 1275 square arches. Other than that, I'm not fussed because I know that I can have a huge amount of fun at 27 miles an hour everywhere. Mm-hmm. They're economical. They're simple to work on. You can get everything from a badge up to a body shell for parts of the thing. So anything you need.
And bang for your buck.
Oh, they're great bang for buck. I saw a rubber bump on sale the other day for $2,500.
They seem like, almost immune to the whole inflation.
They do. Please don't make the prices go up on those before I buy one. But no, that would be my choice. It wouldn't seem which way either of yours when, you know, it wouldn't be as exotic as yours, not as comfortable as yours.
Oh, you'd have such a lovely time, though. It'd be amazing. Well,
exactly. Great fun. And you might remember a couple of years back, we did that twin test of midget versus TF.
Mm-hmm.
And we went out to get tracking shots of the midget. And when we finished, I turned around and went back up the road and went again, just because I could.
Well, again, we had a project car years ago. It was in brown, rubber bumpers. It's about as unloved spec as you could get. But yeah, to drive it, it was brilliant.
I think a midget is one of those classics, and there aren't very many, particularly of that era, where whether it's a good one or a bad one, they're still fun. Like, because you can drive a bad example of a lot of classics and you wonder what the fuss is all about.
Yeah.
A bad XJS is a terrible thing.
Mm.
But even a bad midget is still better than most cars for fun factor.
Yep.
Did the rubber bumper midget get the same suspension front end lift as the B did?
A little bit. But to be honest, for my money, I think the rubber bumper midget wears it better than the B did. I think it's a style of their own. And again, if you want to convert it, there's kits, if you want to lower it, all that kind of stuff.
I would say, because at that point, you're not exactly adding much to your insurance if you modify something like that.
What about, gentlemen, we've been fairly sensible so far. What if you're going to go wild, go for a crazy choice? You don't have to use it every day or even every week if you don't want. It can be unreliable, impractical, weird, rare, whatever.
I went with all of the above.
Yeah, you're all of them.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So I've gone with the Aston Martin Lagonda Saloon, the William Towns Folly.
I think that's the car this category is made for, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I just, I know our colleague, Mr. Wager, also
launched
these crazy cars because they are everything that's eccentric, bonkers about the British car industry. The sort of woeful excesses, kind of idea over economics and everything, it just went wrong from the very start, really. There's a great article in a back issue of Aston Martin Driver, which celebrates the sort of anniversary, because I think it was showed to the public in 1976.
Yeah,
it actually wasn't ready until late 79. Early 80s.
They weren't actually delivered until the 80s. Let's be honest.
Like when I did my run,
we've read the comments.
With your comments
and all that kind of thing about you know, it was, I think it was pitched at about £20,000 when it was initially unveiled. By the time it was phased out in 1990, I think the list price was over £90,000. Yeah,
which would have bought a house, let's be
honest.
Which, you know,
I'd pay a heck of a house.
Yeah.
But I love the styling. I think it's really just utterly...
Wild, yeah.
Yeah, wild, eccentric, but yet actually still strikingly beautiful. Mm. Others might disagree, but I just think it's so distinctive
and really nice inside.
The interior is just a masterpiece.
You see the ones with the TV,
TV,
so you think flat screen. No, it was a full on CRT.
Yeah,
in the back here,
jammed. Yeah. Imagine the captain of industry be in the back of a Lagonda watching the telly. I think that is true. No, fair play.
I think the engine was generally well regarded.
Yeah, it's the V8 one,
particularly the fuel injected ones from what 86 onwards. I think so. If you get a fuel injected one, a
bit more power.
Sort of the later ones. So, yes, that would be my absolutely undeniable wild card.
I mean, it wouldn't work, but what a thing to look at.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
Go on, then.
Well, when we were having a chat before this, I may have let on that I was thinking about Vessel Vega, which is still a very valid choice.
It's absolutely cool,
it's pretty, you're never going to find parts for it, and you won't want to drive very often.
Cool.
But I'm also thinking Lamborghini Espada. Ooh. Now I say that because it's I have a weak spot for a shooting brake estate sort of style of car, and I think that takes that idea and wedgifies it, which makes it woefully impractical.
Yeah,
but it makes it so much cooler looking with that split rear deck. I think it's absolutely gorgeous. It's never going to be particularly fast because it's an old Lambo as it may have been, but it is just gorgeous and completely out there.
Yeah,
and completely impractical. It's just in a similar way to the Lagonda is so strange and wonderful at the same time, comfortable and yet entirely out there. I think this holds a similar sort of vein in that it has this body style which should be practical, but you're only going to fit two people in it, and you're not going to fit as much luggage in it as you should. It's sort of like a cooler version of a coupe SUV, antithetical to its original design, but they actually made it work.
Yeah, I think for the one day a year it worked. That would be very special.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to just rattle off some characteristics, and you can see if you can guess, and you can see if you can guess. So it's Italian. It was only available in left-hand drive.
Mm-hmm.
It's expensive to buy. It's expensive to maintain. It's not especially fast by today's standards. It's ruinous to restore. It's woefully impractical, and yet few cars excite me more than a Lancia Delta Integrale.
Good choice.
Preferably,
it is a good choice.
Preferably Evoluzione with the square, with the box arches. I know.
Fancy little flip up.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Just, you'd have it fully up all the time.
And you would be too.
Oh, yeah, I would be. I appreciate it's not quite as well as your two, but it's still not an easy car to own. And many a fool has been ruined by trying to restore them because they are woefully. I think Chris Harris of Motoring Journalism fame has spent tens of thousands on restoring his one, and his is new an Evo. You know, so they are very expensive to own. The left-hand driveness would probably be an issue in some parts of the UK, and obviously it's a Lancia. It's a Lancia, so it's going to rust. And I think the reliability depends on what kind of mood it's in on the day.
Weren't they rusty before they even put together?
Some of them potentially, yeah. So it would. I think it, after 5 minutes, it would break your heart, and after 5 months, it would take your wallet. But what an experience!
What a car to rob you!
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think I'm a big fan of a rally homologation. I love a Celica GT4. Escort Cosworths have got their place. Evos, all that kind of stuff. But for me, that is the one that gets me excited. I think we've come up with some fine choices there, gents. But the thing is with this, when you're going through your three-car garage, obviously, we're fortunate enough to drive a lot of cars. So there would have been cars that didn't make the cut for all three of us. If I'm brutally honest, one of my wild cars that didn't make the cut was another Italian, Alfa 147 GTA. So similar mould, massive Busso V6 and a tiny little hatchback. Understeer for days, barely works, doesn't go around corners. Again, it will break your heart and your wallet. But yeah, I think that's maybe a slightly more... If you can't quite bring yourself to buy an Integrale, a 147 GTA gives you a bit of that flavour. So for fun choice, again, one of the other most fun cars I've ever driven, Talbot Sunbeam Lotus. So we featured one on the channel before. I thought it was a hoot. It's one of those cars, because we were lent it by Sherwood Restorations, I kind of had it until we were done filming with it. So I think I spent half a day with the thing. It was just fantastic fun, so exciting, so evolving. All those romantic stories you hear about Mark 1 and Mark 2 escorts, no. That is where it's at, and they are fantastic. And the dogleg gearbox, the noise of that one was amazing because it was on sort of big air filters and so
on.
You can
tell you enjoyed driving it from the video.
I loved it, honestly. I absolutely love that car. But
good.
What about you, sir? What didn't make the cut?
Quite a few cars, actually. I basically went through a lot of choices before landing on my final three. I mean, for dailies, I went... Generally, sort of fairly modern stuff, like a VW Golf Mark III.
Fair.
I don't know. They were slightly underrated, and they probably still are a bit rubbish in comparison to the sort of in comparison to Mark I and Mark II, certainly. But I don't think they're as bad as everyone remembers them to be.
No.
And I think if you could find a really nice spec VR6 Highline, was it called? Sort of the very last ones. I think that would be all right.
That's going to be one of those cars that when they are suddenly 10, 20, 30 grand, we're going to go, hang on a minute,
they're actually quite good. With things like the MC MX-5, it's still always the least loved versions of these cars that always get bought.
Yeah.
996, there's another one.
Yeah.
Those are still, for a good one, you could 20 grand.
I also had an X-Type down on my list. Jaguar choice. It was your fault. You did the Bindguard on it a little while ago. Maybe sort of look at them again.
Yeah.
And a 3-litre V6, all-wheel drive one.
State, yeah.
You're not meant to have the auto, but I would because I'm lazy.
It suits that car better.
Yeah, I was going to say.
That auto gearbox isn't actually a good bedfellow for that 3-litre V6. I've got to be honest. I think you're better off with the manual. But for laziness, I would go with the auto.
We are big fans of the X-Type at Black and Squirrel.
And then my slightly, it's not even left field really, but I would go also with a late four-wheel drive Sierra Sapphire Cosworth.
Okay.
And I suppose, if anyone, when we were doing the Mondeo video, Jamie King was sort of going, don't get one of those. They're the worst version of the Cosworth. Proper,
yeah,
you know, whale-tail yeah. one. And I said, yeah, but I quite like the restrained, more civilised.
This is what
like
I said.
Early Audi RS cars.
Yeah. yeah.
Like they just looked like the regular
just
car.
Just like at Audi.
Yeah. For dead.
Yeah.
And that's the fun part.
Yeah. So that would, they were three of my daily choices. Fun to drive, I went very predictable with 205 GTI. Honda S2000, because obviously I've had one.
Yeah, we should just clarify before we carry on. We did rule out picking cars that we own or have owned.
Yes.
Which is why you didn't see me picking W123 like I always do in these videos.
Why didn't see me pick MX5?
Yeah. We weren't allowed to pick cars that we own or have owned, because otherwise all we do is talk about the same four cars every week.
Yes.
So
exactly.
So that's why there is no Honda S2000. That's why there is no MX5 or E30. That's why there is no Mercedes, because we tried to be a little bit different with this one.
Come back next video, then, and that probably
yeah,
exactly. Well, I think some excellent choices there, gentlemen. Some diversity as well. We've got Italian, German, French. Yeah, American. Real American. Yeah, yeah, real mix of hybrids and V8s and V12s and all sorts of stuff. So why don't you let us know in the comments three cars you can have: a daily driver, a weekend fun car, and a total wild card. And should we put the caveat in that you can't currently own any of them as well? So use your imagination a bit, unlimited budget, let us know down below, and we'll pick our favourite. For more Classics World videos, like, subscribe, drop us a comment down below. Anything to add, gents?
No, that's it.
Thanks
for watching. See you soon.
Ta-ra.